Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C-Squared. Now, on our podcast, we interview musicians and other industry professionals to give you an inside look on how to take your music to the next level.
Hello, you are listening to the C-Squared podcast with Holly and Curtis. And today we are here with Skylar from He Is Legend. They have got a new album coming up very soon. It's awesome. So yes, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So with our guests, we usually start with a little nutshell introduction for anyone who doesn't know who you are and what you do. So could you maybe tell us a little bit about He Is Legend for anyone who hasn't heard of you before?
He Is Legend's an American rock and roll band, heavy metal band from North Carolina. And I'm the vocalist, and we've been around since the early 2000s. Our first record came out in like 2003 or four, if memory serves me correctly. And this is our seventh studio album, Endless Hallway.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Holly, you're next.
So, I am indeed. So what was the recording process like for you with this album? Was it a sort of quite difficult, different rather from your previous albums with obviously certain world events going on? Was there anything you did slightly differently to normal?
Yeah, there's a pretty big build up to this one. I mean, we didn't really have a line of guidance as to what we wanted to do. We just knew we wanted to, you know, it was time to put something out kind of when the world went to shit, so to speak. We didn't really have a clear direction. We just knew we needed to put music out, and we didn't want to put anything out with a stamp of like COVID on it. You know, I didn't want to do a live show where it was, you know, masked up and everything like that. We had kind of toyed with the idea of doing a live recording of our album, It Hates You. And we had planned on that and had some special guests and stuff we were going to do. And then another round of lockdown came through, and we just kind of felt like it was probably not the smartest idea when they were telling us not to gather for Thanksgiving to get, you know, 15 people in a room and try to record. So we just continued writing, and there were a bunch of hurdles. I had some health problems last year that were really were taking me out of the game, so to speak. So when it came down to it, we just, you know, when it was all said and done, we needed to push forward. And I just kind of had to force myself to go into recording mode. And yeah, that was way different than anything before. But format wise, we did it not unlike all of our other records. I mean, the last five records we've put out have been recorded very similarly. So yeah, our format hasn't changed. It was just altered by the events, I would say.
I have a follow-up to that. Well, kind of a follow-up. How did you manage to get yourself motivated to continue after, you know, you said you had all the health issues and all this
stuff? I was leaning a lot on my bandmates and just, you know, trying to find, we pushed some dates. We had Shiprocked that we were planning on going on this cruise that we've been a part of a couple of times. And with the plans, it was just like, when I would get sick, it would last for days at a time. So I had to push that and cancel the dates that we had surrounding departure for that tour. And during that, it felt bad. I mean, I've never had to cancel shows before due to something like that. So those issues came up. And then in the interim, while I was waiting, just trying to figure out when it would be good for me to go record, I just kind of had to like pull myself up by my bootstraps and make the drive. It was a 10-hour drive to Nashville from our hometown.
Oh, wow.
Where I produce the vocals. And so our vocal producer and producer Mitch Marlowe, who's been working with us for a while now, he used to play in our band. He was going through some similar things, just kind of a weird black cloud, and we had to kind of lean on each other to motivate each other. So I drove straight to his house, and we didn't leave for you know, the 25 days that I recorded. Yeah, it was, it was just, you know, daunting. It was a very daunting task. And, but yeah, leaning on each other to kind of get each other out of our funk and continue to work was, it was interesting. And it made it a strange process recording, but sure. Looking back now, it seems like all a fever dream. And I don't rightly remember how any of this came about. It's just a very gray area. It seems weird. It doesn't seem like I was there, but yeah. Also on top of that, not knowing like what, you know, I'm a very bad judge of my work. So I need the affirmation of others that hear it to say like, oh, this is good, or this is, you know, you could have done better, or something like that. You can't always expect people to tell you the truth, but
of course.
So now that the record's coming out and we're getting people that are actually into it and you know, stoked to hear it, I it's kind of like a weight off my shoulders, because it was a very, very surreal, very personal process this time. Whereas, you know, a lot of the other Legend records lyrically are, you know, kind of derivative fairy tales and just brought about from like personal experience that are translating to, you know, translate to some sort of like fantastical fairy tale imagery or whatever.
Yeah.
I had to kind of push that focus into these personal stories or aspects of like what I was feeling at the time, on top of this like really dark sickness, not really feeling like a rocker, not really feeling aggressive, mm-hmm. Kind of feeling like a shell of myself. So it was definitely a strange process, to say the least.
Assuming that you don't go through any trials and tribulations next time, this is a little bit of a follow-up to that. How do you think your next album is going to come about, considering how you did it this time, though?
We're always in that position where we're just kind of like keeping our eye on the next writing process. So yeah. I would hope without the constraints of poor health, then it might be easier. I may have learned something from this process that might have changed, you know, the way that we go about configuring things dynamically. But I think at this point, we're just ready for this album to start pushing. And I don't think we have our eye on the next one yet.
Sure.
But as far as, you know, as far as the band is concerned and the way that we work, it's like anytime we have downtime, there's, you know, we try to make room for new music. So
fair.
You know, when we were pulled off the road, we had 2 full years at home just being like, what's going on? So
Yep. This
is kind of a different circumstance, but yeah, I don't think it would be any different if we were coming off of 2 years of touring and just saying like, hey, we need to buckle down and like start to get some music in line. I think we learn from every process that we've gone through. So the next recording process, I'm sure we will have some bullet point notes for where we need to be standing in the field when it comes. So
fair.
Yeah, it's always a learning process. I mean, it's been 20 years and I'm still learning things to do, you know, and things that I could do better and how to better myself in and out of vocal performance and booth or whatever. So
yeah,
I'm excited about the future for sure. I think this cool. has just been like a really good learning experience for all of us.
Did you think that it was going to be over at any point during the pandemic?
Oh yeah. I mean, there were certain points where, I mean, obviously we felt, as opposed to, well, maybe not opposed to all other bands, but a lot of other bands, you know, a lot of bands broke up during the pandemic. A lot of bands just decided that they couldn't do this anymore. You know, there's a lot of neuroses and just turmoil that came. I mean, you see large acts now just like calling in sick from tour, just saying like, you know, for mental health reasons, they can't push on. The game has changed a lot, you know, this world is, well, where we are now, it's just this new era of social media and, you know, everybody has to have a TikTok and have some dance or some craze or something, you know, like we're kind of on the cusp of watching these bands that were given a kind of grandfathered in to be Luddites and not know how to navigate social media as well. And we are that band. Like we don't have a huge social footprint. We don't post ridiculously because it seems forced, you know, because we're kind of private guys to some extent. And so we're learning as we go along. But yeah, I think, I think there were certain times where I just didn't know, you know, the first tour we did back with Attila, the first four nights I was sick and I was having episodes and didn't know if I was going to be able to finish the tour, and then slowly gathering my bearings and figuring out what worked and what didn't. I kind of, you know, had to like, I had to go through some trials on this tour to figure out how I was going to manage on the road. 'Cause it is a hard life, you know, mm-hmm. and with what I, you know, what I'm dealing with was gastroparesis, which the main things are like no stress, no, you know, like be careful with your sleep, which you get none of that on tour. You get lots of stress. Yeah. Like just almost everything, diet, everything that goes along with being in a traveling American rock and roll band is like against what I should be doing for my health. So,
oh no.
Yeah, there's a lot of preparation that I had to kind of, that I didn't anticipate. And then when I got on the road, I kind of had to play catch up and figure out exactly what was going wrong. But I'm here now, no episodes, no real sickness for months. And I feel like I'm kind of on the good foot. So good. We shall see. Yeah.
Hopefully it stays that way.
Yeah, hopefully.
So, okay. So next question. So we wanted to like ask you what the promotion has been like for the new album versus how it was the last time pre-pandemic for you guys. Has you noticed any differences in how things have been going?
We're essentially a DIY, self-managed, all like in-house working project. So yeah. When it comes to like the promotion and aspects of that nature from the label's perspective, I'm sure there's a bit more that's being done because there's this new life in music essentially, and everybody's mm-hmm. trying to cash in on, you know, everybody wants to be on the road right now. There's a shortage of tour vans and buses. There's, yep. you know, everybody's out and it's hard to get shows, you know, like we just book this run with our buddies in Valiant Thor that we're going on next, starting this Friday when the record comes out. And it's kind of hard just to even find venues because there's so many shows going on because of the reopening and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I believe most of the stuff that we do self promotion wise, is maybe not seen as much as, you know, I mean, we've gone so far in the past as to like, you know, commission street team members and try to do things the old like 90s punk way, because we, you know, we grew up, you know, never really calling ourselves punk or metal or you're not really any genre specific terms, but we grew up, you know, making our own flyers in the library, you know, and like cutting and pasting on our own, just like, you know, weird medical photos on flyers and nice. Doing shows that way. So like trying to get back into that and trying to have like, you know, boots on the ground as far as our fans are concerned, because our fans are our biggest line of promotion. I think our word of mouth and our, we have a cult following, which is amazing. And our fans have always been great for us. So I think those things have probably changed because people were so starved for live music and, you know, so interested in what had happened to, you know, 'cause what happened over the last 2 years has changed all artists, regardless of whether you believe it or not. You know, you really are a product of your environment after a while. So, yeah, I think I don't know if the what's really gone on from the label aspect as far as promotion has changed as much, but I know that our mindsets have changed as far as like how to go about understanding where, you know, in certain cities we have a bigger following than another. So, you know, we rely on fans to spread the word and get their friends to come out and stuff like that, which has always worked out well for us. Fair. So yeah, I think it's we're grassroots for sure, as much as we can be. So yeah, we rely on that.
Cool. I have one more follow-up question on promotion before I let Holly ask her questions, because we're only got about 10 minutes. But what do you think of the recent trend for most bands to release a ton of singles versus in the lead up to promotion? I know you guys didn't do like tons and tons this time, but a lot of bands are doing that. So I'm just curious.
We did more than normal.
Yeah.
I think that the old ways are kind of obsolete now of like releasing one single and and hoping it pushes the viewpoint of what a record sounds like to your fans. Whereas like that might have happened weeks before an album drop. Now you've got to release like a couple of months before, and
or even a year in some cases.
Yeah, even a year. And I think I don't know if anybody really, except for people, you know, in our age range, really look for like the brunt of a full record. And like, and I don't know if it's really a thing that people look at anymore as like, as a piece of work in its entirety. I mean, I think some people do, and I think we certainly do as artists. Like we want the album to represent itself and to be a flowing body of work, but the numbers would tell you that that doesn't matter, because it just, you know, your single matters and eyes on the screen matter. So yeah, I think it's weird, but I think it's the way it's going to be. And I think that, like even you look at bands like Slipknot, who just have just now announced that they're going to, you know, they're just going to be releasing songs. They're not going to be putting out full albums anymore.
Yeah.
There's something to be said about that, but also the old ways do always kind of prevail. You can see like where, you know, the punk generation that just brought cassettes back just for no reason, you know, like it's fun to see cassettes on people's merch tables, and it's like that's a terrible form of media, but it's, you know, for nostalgia, you know, for nostalgia reasons, it's somehow made some weird resurgence. So yeah, who can say what, you know, I think most people can tell you that the powers that be don't always have the best taste in what's supposed to be done, and
this is true.
But they follow the leader really well. So I mean, if it's working for one person, then you're probably you'll probably be able to do that if that's something you wanted to do. If you can show that you have like a test group that shows that it worked before, so that's kind of the way music's always been run. But I like seeing that artists are getting their I guess being able to do what they want in some aspects of like creativity. And if that's putting out a cassette tape, then that's cool. You know, I mean, whatever. Like, if it's good for you, it's good for us. So, yeah, I don't know if that's ever going to be something that Legend does, but I think watching bands like Turnstile put out essentially a full EP before their album comes out, I think that really does like keep people watching, which is what you want. You know, I mean, because the second that you go dormant and the second that you're not putting music out, it's not a matter of if you're hot or not. It's just that you're not in the spotlight. So people just kind of forget, you know, our attention spans are very thin these days. So
I agree.
Yeah, it becomes an issue. But so I think doing things like that, releasing more singles, is probably just to keep you in the public's eye rather than any, like, there's probably no like monetary reason, not to my knowledge, but if it works, you know, it works.
Fair enough. Holly, back over to you for our last 10 minutes.
Yes. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about songwriting. You've mentioned a little bit already about obviously being sort of subject to the environment and the effects that that's had, and obviously being separated and everything like that. Mm-hmm. How did you find sort of the songwriting process? Because I assume it was kind of all remote, so perhaps you'd have certain people working on music and send it over and then add lyrical melodies and things like that.
That's usually how we do it. Adam Tambu is our guitar player, and he's the key songwriter. He has the skeletal structure like in his head that he and Jesse will work out in the rooms, and Matt, and they'll basically build the song. And we just recently kind of with Jesse having a little more background in music production and like recording, we kind of got a rig set up in our rooms to be able to record and mimic what we do in studio. So we were able to kind of build the songs a little better than we normally would. Normally it would just be like a one mic in a room recording, and then I would kind of have to pick these blown out MP3s apart in my head and like try to hear what it all sounded like to me, which it's essentially puzzle piecing, which we've always done, you know, even up to the day you're recording guitar tracks, things change so much in that process when you finally hear what, you know, Adam had been planning, because we do, you know, we do some a lot of layering, and our songs are kind of like these soundscapes, so to speak. So yeah, it was not unlike our other recording processes, but the fact that we had a bit of a better just a better quality demo from the rooms really helped me in the end. But yeah, it's still, regardless of what you can do on your own in the rooms, when you get into the studio, things change so much. And it just, yeah. So, I mean, it was interesting because we did have like this really long, and for the guys in the room, you know, they kind of burned themselves out on recording before we even started recording, just trying to get, you know, a demoing process done in a manner that they felt happy with. So yeah, we're sticklers and you know, we want to put everything into it. So that's kind of why we've continued to go on the same format. It seems to work for us. So why change it?
Fair enough. I have a final question, unless Holly's got something else she wants to ask. Nope.
No, that's all good.
So considering this is more industry focused and a lot of our audience is musicians, so what would be your advice for anyone looking to get to the next level in their career as a musician?
I think my advice has always been to budding musicians who just want to do, you know, they want to be on tour, they want to play. I think the best advice I ever got as a young man was to leave town, to play as much as you can outside of your comfort zone, you know, because when you're young and you have, you know, whatever. Amount of following or you play for in your hometown, you kind of have a bit of a safety net there, as you're not away from your own bed and you're not, you know, you can kind of run and just feel some sort of comfort in your hometown. I think if you're able to travel, if you're able to play even an hour outside of your town, even, you know, getting on a show, trying to get local opening slots in other cities, I think that the fact that when you travel to play music, it opens up a new experience for you. Mm-hmm. And it just gives you a taste of like the fact that it's not all glitz and glam and you can folks, you know. So when we first started playing, we would travel to Myrtle Beach, which was like, you know, it's like an hour and a half from us. And we would play some shows with bands like Beloved and Norma Jean and things like that, who were from Atlanta. So it wasn't too far of a drive. And we would just catch up with these bands that were regionally, locally, our peers. So I think number one is becoming friends with bands that you enjoy, that you feel like they're in your caliber, and then setting up shows to play. I just think playing out and getting a taste for being on the road is the only way to really get yourself ready for what is to come. And the more you play out, the more you travel, the more you find ways to break the habits of just being, you know, playing the same jaunts in your hometown, the more that you start to respect the craft, and the more that you like become inspired by the road, because it is a really dark, seedy, anonymous place. And yep. To draw inspiration from something like that, you know, is, I think it's key. I think it's a main point, or a main, you know, one of the biggest things that'll put hair on your chest, for lack of a better term. You know, you get out there and play and get thrown to the wolves, and you get, you know, You get your feelings hurt a couple of times, but you learn from it every time. And then you obviously bring something back home with you each time. So I think that's probably the best advice I ever got, was get out of town, you know? Perfect. So, yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Is there anything else that you would like to say before we end off?
Yeah, hopefully we have a lot of tour dates in the new year. And for now we have a string of dates taking us out to Texas and back. So if you're in the lower 48 and, or, you know, and below the Mason-Dixon line, we've got some Southern tour dates coming up, and then hopefully we'll be adding a bunch more as the new year dawns. So keep an eye out for us. And Endless Hallway comes out this Friday, 11/11.
That's right. Cool. Well, thank you again for joining us. And with that,
thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. With that, we're done.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by leaving us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. You can also join the conversation by following us on any social media and suggesting guests or topics you'd like to learn more about. Thanks for listening to C-Squared.